This podcast was recorded on Kaurna land. We acknowledge the Kaurna people as the original custodians of the land and pay our respects to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples.
You'll want to make a note.
Should you be taking notes or something?
You got a pencil? Write this down, quick.
Why aren't you taking notes?
Write this down.
Aren't you going to write this down?
Did you need me to take notes?
Please take note.
Look at the footnotes.
I should footnote this.
Is there another footnote?
And there's a footnote at the bottom, plus footnotes, endnotes, a glossary, and two epilogues.
Find out what it says in the footnote.
Welcome back to Footnotes. In the off week, we'll be going back and picking out the best bits of our episodes so far, and you might even hear some bonus content here and there. Full episodes will always be linked in the show notes, so you can go back and listen to the whole conversation. We were really lucky earlier this year to speak to an expert in women's history in Adelaide about what life was like 150 years ago for women at the university and how that's changed over time. So here's a snippet of our interview with Professor Alison McKinnon from UniSA.
Well, there was very little of women in academia in the 1800s. They didn't really get anywhere near it till very late in the century, when a few women started attending lectures. But that wasn't until the university was established in 1874. They weren't admitted to degrees at that stage, not until that fact that you mentioned about 1881. So they could attend lectures, and many did. But also a large number of them had not had the sort of education to prepare them for a university degree.
Mm.
Girls' schools at the time tended not to be very academic, although a few were moving in that direction. And the state of South Australia was quite unusual in that it established a high school for girls called the Advanced School for Girls, which gave girls the sort of education to prepare them for university. So South Australia was really very forward-looking in that regard.
Yeah, and at that point in time, what had women's contribution to academics and research looked like? Were they able to contribute to any of the research going, even if it was, say, the men who were leading it?
They weren't particularly involved at that stage, although they may have been research assistants, but there were women who did research, particularly in areas like botany. There were quite a few women botanists who were making all sorts of discoveries and writing them up, but they were out pretty much outside academia. They were just women who were very interested in their field. And I think you would have to say in the 19th century, really, there were hardly any women contributing to the university as such. But they were certainly very keen to be getting in there and to start taking degrees.
Yeah, exactly. The lack of interest is not an issue.
No, it was not an issue. And it really was, as you say, very exciting that the University of Adelaide was able to offer degrees to women and degrees in science at such an early stage.
Mm.
And they had tried to do it at the opening of the university, but that was knocked back by the Colonial Office, which determined what happened in South Australia, because they said there's no English precedent.
Oh.
But by the time they asked again, there was a university of London that had opened degrees to women. So they allowed that then. But we had to follow British precedent. Mind you, those big universities of Oxford and Cambridge didn't admit women till way, way later.
Mm.
They really held out against women.
Yeah, that's so interesting that they've been pushing for it for so long, waiting on everyone else to catch up, essentially.
Yeah, eventually, yeah.
And why is it so significant that the University of Adelaide gave women equal footing to men when it came to their education?
Well, that was extremely important, because in some universities, women were very much separated off. But no, they weren't in Adelaide. There was some dissension sometimes in classes and a bit of carry on from the men, and some pretty awful stories, really, about some of the things that happened. But on the whole, the women were accepted. They were there in lectures. I was looking recently at a story about Helen Mayo, who was one of the first medical graduates. And she was the only woman in her class. But she just happily sort of rolled along. And in fact, she topped her year.
There you go.
they seemed to be accepted. So that was a really important step, that women were accepted as equals, but certainly in far from equal numbers.
I think that's something that still carries through. I think in there are quite a number of disciplines currently where women are still underrepresented in higher education.
Yes, absolutely. That's something we've been working on for a long time. And it does seem rather extraordinary that our first woman graduate at the University of Adelaide was the first science graduate.
Yes.
But that was because science was seen as not quite the thing. It was better to have degrees in classics and Latin and Greek and all those things. But that changed very rapidly, particularly in a society like South Australia, which needed science and indeed technology to get it really moving.
Yeah, definitely.
But yes, as you say, women now are still trying to catch up in the science and technology fields.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. And what impact did allowing women to get involved actually have on the state itself?
Well, yes, there was, although the numbers were very small, really. I think by about 1900, they had only about 28 graduates in all.
Mm.
But it had a huge impact on women in teaching. Women went into all the schools and sort of helped to raise the standards so that the academic level was much higher. But when the professions opened up for women, that brought a different perspective.
And what are some of the things that women have been able to contribute thanks to their education here at the University of Adelaide?
Well, I think we've got a huge range of contributors at the University of Adelaide. I mean, if I could go back to the earliest days, women like Ellen Benham, Helen Mayo, Vita McGay, who was a wonderful headmistress of Adelaide High School, a strong union woman, and she rode a motorbike. She was quite notorious for a motorbike. Then there've been so many women who've contributed to politics.
Mm.
I mean, even if we sort of come up to closer to the present, we've got Julia Gillard.
Yes.
First female prime minister. Julie Bishop, Amanda Vanson, Penny Wong, our current foreign minister. We have Frances Adamson, who was a top-class diplomat, head of DFAT, and now our governor in South Australia. Women have contributed enormously. But even back in earlier days, Mary Tennyson Woods, who got her law degree in 1916, became the head of the Office of Status of Women in the United Nations.
Wow.
So that was a very international role.
Yeah, and I'm sure a lot of those women would be very driven, knowing their place as a woman in society and in education and knowing the value, I guess, of being allowed to enter those spaces.
Yes, absolutely. Many of them, of course, in the early days, if they married, it was very hard to continue with a career. Some did, particularly a few medical women, but most did not. And those who married certainly imbued their own daughters with an urge to go on and being educated, were very, very supportive. Mm. But I should point out that with those early women, the very earliest ones, one of the most interesting factors was the role of their fathers. Many of the fathers really sort of pushed them to go on with education. It was whereas we tend to sometimes think of a Victorian father as holding them back, and many did, there were also some very enlightened fathers. Yeah.
And what is the broader impact of having women's voices included in university spaces and research communities?
Well, the broader impact is just bringing more talent into the field and also sometimes changing the questions that are asked, particularly in law humanities and social sciences, where women have really become very interested in issues concerning women. The early medical women were very interested in women and children's health. In fact, Helen Mayo started a hospital for babies, started sort of the whole idea of mothercraft and babies being weighed and looked after. So often women have changed the focus to include women in ways that hadn't been before. And the women in law were very keen to do that. And when you think of people like Dame Roma Mitchell, very, very famous, who became one of the first women judges, one of the first women in the Supreme Court, and people like that are bringing a different perspective to their work. But one of the fascinating things I found about many of the early women is they didn't marry and have children at the same rate as their sisters. Often they chose to devote themselves to a profession or to start a school, to start a medical practice, and many of them lived in long partnerships with other women and took on their whole lifelong role of trying to make things better for women and girls.
Take note.
Next time I promise to read all the footnotes.
This is a UOA On Campus production.